all of a sudden, it wasn't just Facebook for chatting with friends at home. And all of a sudden, we were trying to create this world where we could engage with our consumers there.
My name's Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. I call it actionable empowerment. Every single episode, you'll hear the story of a fantastic woman in tech, from engineers to founders to investors to journalists to designers, all sorts of different females in tech who have thrived. I want to share their stories with you so that you can know what resources, mentors, and life situations they accessed in order to get to where they are today. Enjoy. To be notified every time a new Women in Tech episode is released, simply text Women in Tech to 310-872-2423. That's 310-872-2423. To support the Women in Tech Show, it's super easy. All you need to do is start doing your Amazon shopping by clicking on this link first, womenintechshow.com/Amazon. That's womenintechshow.com/Amazon.
Welcome back to the Women in Tech podcast. I am still in Dublin, Ireland, and today I am Dogpatch Labs. Dogpatch Labs is an amazing influential space in Dublin, helping the entrepreneurial community accelerate forward. And I am here with Sarah. Hi.
Hi, it's Bree.
And Sarah, tell me a little bit about, introduce yourself and tell me a bit about your company.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk to you.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of the show, so thank you very thank much you. For having me. I guess my background is marketing. I worked for 10 years for Unilever in their global marketing department in the ice cream category, 5 years of which were in Italy as global marketing manager. And I suppose that 10 years working for Unilever kind of ingrained that sense of consumer insight and passion for solving consumer needs. After that, I worked in different places around the world as well, but came back to Ireland after 10 years abroad and did an MBA in SmartFit, which is our business school, the number one business school in Ireland. And during that particular course, there was a module doing business in emerging markets where we traveled to China. And we met with many professors and industry experts and different companies, international companies that operate there. And every single person we met that was classified as an expert spoke about the problems with toxins in the food chain in China and the resulting problems with trust between consumers and what they can find in the supermarket. And I was clearly stunned by this and very much motivated by the fact my background being in food and food marketing and international commercial roles. I was actually just very much motivated to become part of a solution for that particular consumer group. So, for example, in China in 2009, there was a serious contamination of the infant milk formula market where there was introduction of melamine into the mix and caused hundreds of thousands of babies to get very, very sick. So that was kind of the catalyst for what is now a massive trust issue in China associated with baby products, food products, and a wider health awareness.
And how long ago was this?
This 2 years ago.
Wow, that's relatively recent.
Yeah, quite, well, sometimes it feels like 10 years ago. Time has another meaning when you have your own company. I started the company, however, just over 1 year ago. And we are now in a phase of testing sales and route to market for that particular market. But when I started 2 years ago, the idea was to come back to Ireland, use the clean environment of Ireland to create a range of products for the Chinese market. And in so doing, discover just how difficult it is for suppliers on this side of the world to actually access the Chinese market.
That's really interesting when the Chinese market is what builds all of our stuff over, at least in the States. Yeah.
So getting stuff out is pretty easy. Getting stuff in is not so easy.
Incredible.
For a various number of reasons. So from there, learning that process of becoming what it would have been essentially a branded player, realizing actually the problem here is not that, you know, there are many, many producers in Ireland and Europe that are already producing products that are beautifully designed for a Chinese market, upper middle class market. But they are either, maybe don't have the cash to go after the Chinese market because it's $500,000 upfront investment, 2 years before you even sell a piece or a product or anything in there generally. And just how difficult it is. So instead of becoming the supplier, what I've done is developed what is effectively a marketplace that links consumers that are seeking clean, toxin-free food and other products, personal care products, to the suppliers on this side of the market, and equally solving a problem both for the suppliers and for the consumer in that respect. So it's a two-sided marketplace where we allow the supplier within weeks and very little investment by comparison to the traditional method of exporting to China, access to this group of consumers. We're not a mass market platform. We are very much premium luxury service for a particular upper middle class urban-based mother. But what it does a number of things. For SMEs, so on the supplier side, for smaller companies, it gives them an additional revenue line that maybe they otherwise never would have considered, but also gives them the chance to demonstrate traction. So when they decide, let's say together we create a good, strong traction, we understand pricing, messaging together through the platform, it gives them greater negotiating power when they do go the traditional route, which is the mass market route, to better negotiate pricing and better negotiate a deal and create a more sustainable model in that market into the future. So it's a really very, it's got lots and lots of benefits for both the consumer, but also for our suppliers on this side.
Let's bring it back to you though. When did you first discover technology?
Discovering technology, I say I discover it every single day. Technology is what enables me to do this, but I am fundamentally a business person. So my team are very much are developing the solution on an ongoing basis. And it is, to a large extent, still quite a lot of concierging because we have to figure out the process so that we can automate it using technology. And I guess technology for me, I probably first really discovered it when I was in Unilever and the internet exploded and started to really change how we engage with consumers. And then furthermore, when I worked as commercial director for a company called Digicel, where I was responsible for mergers and acquisitions for fiber companies and brought a company that was a single play telecommunications company into a triple play environment to acquisitions of different smaller companies across the Caribbean. And that was very heavily hardware orientated and network orientated.
Did you discover tech through your family? Like, how old were you?
I'm actually a lot older than most tech founders. I'm almost 40. So the internet happened when I was in my late teens, right. And it really, I know pre-internet and post-internet, and I have experienced that firsthand. My first mobile phone was when I was 21 years of age.
Yeah.
I remember that moment, and I remember getting my first email account, and it was Hotmail.
Yeah.
And it was 1999, because I was living in Austria at the time, I was studying in Austria and being so afraid of it.
Yeah.
How does this work? It's magic. Yeah. And now it's just so much part of our every single day. Like, I met a friend yesterday who works for Square in St. Louis, and she receives 400 emails a day.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And she gave me anxiety just telling me the story.
Where would you say you excel most within the tech field today?
Much more a business person than a technology person. So my background is in, like I said, I worked as marketing for Unilever internationally for 10 years. And through that, like literally towards the last 2 to 3 years of my time at Unilever living based out of Rome, we really just started to explore social media as a means of communicating. And I every time there's this massive shift, there's this fear. Are we doing it right? Are we breaking it? Are we using it incorrectly? Are we going to, like, especially with Unilever, because it's so big. If you do something wrong, you could really damage the brand,
totally.
Like international global brand. So there's this fear associated with that. And actually on the flip side now, I see that as a great value in being in a small and growing market, because no matter what, I say to my team every day, if you're not trying, there's no point. If you're not feeling, you're not trying.
Right.
So there was a massive moment in Unilever when my time at Unilever, when all of a sudden it wasn't just Facebook for chatting with friends at home. And all of a sudden we were trying to create this world where we could engage with our consumers there. And that came with a lot of fear, I suppose. And I keep using the word fear, but I embrace the word fear and I embrace fear because if I'm not feeling that, I'm not pushing boundaries and I'm not trying anything new. And that's something that really motivates me in a positive way, even though the word can be filled with quite a lot of negativity. Certainly when I lived in Italy, I felt so far away from Ireland, even though it's just three hours by plane. And I look at you and you're traveling Europe and you're like, oh, no problem. But in those days, it was texting.
Yeah.
There was no Skyping. Emailing and texting was how we communicated. And just in 2 or 3 years, all of a sudden, I'm living further away in the Caribbean, in a third world environment where even the internet accessibility was only starting to explode.
Right.
And I'm able to Skype with my 60-something-year-old mom.
Yeah.
And she's like waving at me, and it's like completely changing my life as an like somebody who's lived and worked in many different countries around the world. For me, that ability to see somebody and speak to them daily or weekly, it just really changed how I was able to fulfill both my dream to travel and also that need to stay connected with friends and family.
Why was it important for you to become a founder? I mean, it's a lot of responsibility.
It is. It is. And every day it is growing responsibility. But I don't know, SB, your background, but literally when I was, this sounds really, really, really stupid, but in school, in primary school, so that's like under the age of 10.
Yeah.
When everybody else used to play doctors and nurses or chase, I used to pretend I was an international businesswoman.
Oh, I love that.
And I used to pretend I had my little briefcase, and I used to be traveling the world. So I felt like every decision then I made, from going to university and taking a job at Unilever, was always to fulfill that. But in the back of my mind, it was like, but this is just a stepping stone. This is really just about learning so that when I find the big idea, I will be able to fulfill it. So, and that it really has always been my passion. So when I chose to go to Digicel, which is a relatively small telecommunication company based in Central America.
Is this after Caribbean? College?
This is actually after Unilever. So it's 2012. To 2015.
Just in case, can you tell us what Unilever is?
Unilever owns the brands that are in your cupboard and in your fridge. So the Breyers ice cream brand and Ben & Jerry's ice cream brand, they're two brands that would have fallen under my remit when I was working for Unilever globally. And a number of brands across Europe, from Carte d'Or and HB Hazelbrook Farm, Walls. And I can't remember the names of the Asian brands, but there's just a multitude. So I was responsible for the ice cream part of the ice cream category. But then you've got Knorr soups and brats, which you also have in the US. But it's basically and Persil.
An umbrella brand.
It's a company that owns hundreds of consumer brands.
So you guys can think of it like, I mean, a lot of you will probably understand at this point, but you could think of it like when there's a tech company that, like one of my favorites is Basecamp, and like, or 37 Signals used to create Basecamp and Hi-Rise and all this stuff. And then if they eventually omitted all the products, and now they only have like, you know, Basecamp, but like it's a larger company that's kind of like you don't really know the name, and then they build a whole bunch of brands and you know the names of those brands.
Yeah.
And then those brands are built like on their own identity.
Exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, continue. I like to make it as like basic as possible, just in case you never know who's listening. Yeah. So you worked for them, and then afterwards you worked for a smaller company.
Smaller company, yeah.
And then when was that point when you're like, I want to create my own company?
So the decision to move to Digicel was very much about experiencing a smaller company in a new industry to, again, explore experiences that would allow me to jump into my own company as the idea arose. So I'm always thinking about ideas. This is my third startup. It's not like something that kind of fell out of the sky. I'm always trying something new.
And what was your first startup?
My first startup was called Unicube, and it was called Unicube, and it was using recycled materials to create housing for the underprivileged and students.
It's incredible.
So it was a modular construction company.
And how large did that get?
It didn't get, we got to the place where we started to raise funding, and I struggled to find the team I needed to be able to make it a reality. And at that time, I also was now working on Mama Bud, and could see a better fit for me on my history, right, and my skill set to be able to bring that fruit to fruition.
And what was your second startup?
There was this one, and then there was the intermediate one, of which Mama Bud has come from. So it was called Creva Club, and that was about creating a range of products suitable for consumption in China. And I've moved away from what was a product-based company to a technology company, me focusing really on the consumer need for safety. So we use the platform to give the Chinese consumer access to safe products, which is otherwise not always a given over there.
And how large is Mama Bud, your company, today?
It's still in the early stages. So we've raised just over 150,000 euros so far. And we have just over 1,000 active, what we call consumer base. And we are in test selling mode. But our first commercial launch, so our investment, will start into the market from post Chinese New Year, so first week in February.
And how many people are on your team?
I have built around me an amazing team of people, mostly from China. And I have 3 full-time, one of which is a consultant, and 1 employee and 1 intern. Then I have a bunch of about 4 part-time employees that cover things from content creation, web development, etc.
Awesome. Amazing. What would you say, going from a little girl dreaming, being an international businesswoman of mystery, to today actually being one, what would you say is your favorite part?
I would say the self-discovery and the realization that every day, that realization, I actually can do this. You know, sometimes I feel it can be so overwhelming to take that leap out of what's a comfortable position in a corporate organization to really putting yourself out there. And every day just surprising myself that actually what I'm doing is good. It's for a good reason. I'm really solving problems for a multitude of different customers, and I can do it. You know, I'm not afraid. You know, I'm not afraid to try anymore. It's been a really extraordinary journey. But having said that, there's things that keep me awake every night, and that will continue to happen. And I believe that's both a good thing and a bad thing. But the good side being, I care so much about what I'm doing. I'm so passionate about it. My fiance would call me obsessed, but I'm really just very, very passionate about solving these problems for people on both sides of the globe.
I love it. I love it. And if you guys want to connect with more people like Sarah on the Women in Tech podcast, be sure to go to the Women in Tech Facebook group, which you can go to directly going to womenintechvip.com. It takes you straight to the Facebook group, womenintechvip.com. Sarah, thank you so much for sharing your story for being a part of the Women in Tech world. You guys, of course, always feel free to tweet me at Esprit Devora or at Women in Tech Show. I will talk to you guys, hear you guys, see you guys in the next episode. Bye.
The Women in Tech Show is hosted by Esprit Devora, edited by MKW Films, show notes provided by Carl Marty, music by Jay Huffman Live. The Women in Tech Show is a WeAreTech.fm production.